Or like, you can just get up. If you get tired, you can just get up and walk out. You can do what you want to. But I don't know. I just like nature just like it is. I mean, I never did care a whole lot. It didn't take me long that I got away from fancy things. I don't care too much about anything. Like a new car, I used to think I'd always like a new car. But I wasn't too long until, well, the way I was raised up, you didn't have it. Then you thought you wanted it. And then you found out that there was a lot of things in life that you just couldn't have, that other things was more important, So you learned to live with what you had, that's all. I mean, just like a car, you have to have it now, but you don't have to have a Chrysler or a Cadillac. You need a car that will take you and bring you. But I don't think, just like a lot, I think that's what's wrong with the country today. Everybody went too fancy.
Try to get above their reason.
Right, spend too much money. Yeah, I couldn't have lived here. Well, that's the only reason I can say that I stayed here, really, because I learned to live on little, where other people wanted more. But still, in the end, I'm just about as well off as them, you know what I mean? It went away. It all goes and comes, I think. I mean, the fella only gets so far, it don't make any difference. They're a peak in everybody's life. I think they're a peak in your life, they're a peak in my life. You'll do well to a certain point. And then you start going back down another way. Just like age, your financial problems, I think, same way.
So you've lived along this river all of your life.
Right. Just like I say, just like my brother, for instance, but he'd been gone for 30 years.
Which brother?
The one that drowned in. And they just, me and him and oldest brother, we was closer, because we was raised up more together than what the younger ones is, because we was the three first ones. And we had just a little bit of stronger ties because then after we growed up to a certain point and they was all small, the rest of them, we had to leave, But of course, I was more acquainted with all of them, really, than what my oldest brother and what Raymond was, because both of them, they left, Like, my oldest brother, he left here in 1941. He spends little of time home. He never comes back that much. Raymond was gone, he's been gone for 30 years, and he'd just come back. He'd been back 15 months, But he come back every summer on vacation. That's how he built his house, and stuff.
Where had he been living?
Pittsburgh. See, he worked, he whenever, like when we come back from the service, like I say, they wasn't that much to do here. Everybody, some drifted off, they had a period, they drifted off to Ohio. And I know then later they started drifting off to Virginia, like one of my younger brothers. He went to Virginia because like then, the school system picked so many people, and they got them a federal job of some kind, like FBI, CIA. They'd come around. They don't do that anymore. But I have one brother who works for the CIA. He's been in there ever since he graduated from high school. But they picked him in the Mountaineer High School, him and I forget who else was in his class. They picked him, And he's been there ever since, and he's got educated in that, plus he's went to college, he made his way on to college. He lives down there. And my oldest brother, he went to the Marines, but he graduated from Morgantown in 41. In the spring of 41, I reckon. I know he owed a lot of money, you know, where he'd been going to school. And he worked, drove spikes. They was redoing Thomas Mountain at that time, and they got him a job on the railroad, and he drove spikes after coming out of school that year. His hands was all blistered. But he was going to the service, and they had graduated from took ROTC in agriculture, you know, and then he had decided that he was going to the service because there's more money. Like agriculture, it never has been that good, you know. But he would have been an instructor, you know, in high school in agriculture. Teaching profession was slumped too, you know, it was no good. And but so that he was going to go in the Army. And they had canceled his call, you know. So he went to work on the railroad up there against the mountain. And my mother wanted him to teach school. And he said, no, there wasn't no money in school teaching. He wouldn't. He couldn't pay his bills. So Army, whenever they canceled him out then, he just got in his car and he went to Washington and enlisted in the Marines. And they called him in a couple of weeks. But he was lacked 2 or 3 pounds of being heavy enough at that time, you know. You had to have real good health at that time, you know. And they told him what to do and to come back in 3 or 4 weeks and try it again. And that he did, and he made it. And he stayed in there 30 years. But he lives down in Alexander. He's a real estate agent down there. But he finished college. He went to school all the time. He was in the service. He went from first lieutenant to colonel. He'd been all over.
But Raymond had been in...
Raymond, he left... Yeah, he left here about 1947, I reckon, or something like that. And he stayed in Pittsburgh. He went to work in the steel mills. And then he got on the railroad in the diesel part. And he hung that out till 15 months ago, you know. And then he took his retirement. He was still only 59 years old. He hadn't got his railroad retirement, but he was drawing his mill retirement, you know. But he was getting pretty good vacation, so he bought this lot up here, and then he come back down here, and he'd save his money and build his house. And he kept doing that. Well, he had it done when he retired. All he had to do, he sold his property up there and moved back down here. And just lived 15 months. He had a lot of money tied up in it.
How had the river behaved all those years? I mean, you saw it high before, hadn't you?
Yeah, but not this high. I spoke in 1918 or something like that. Like, got a tree down there where you come in at the gate. Now, Oliver Carr's lived there then, and I've heard him talk about it running through that house right down there by the road, 2 feet deep. And that was about as high as I'd heard of it, you know what I mean, till 50, somewhere in the 50, whichever year that Hurricane Hazel tore around, whatever year that was, 54, 52. And it was up to the edge of this bank down here, and it covered part of that bottom over there, and it come down through and crossed over there. But it mounted to about what I'd heard of, you know, back in the teens, I believe, 1918 or somewhere in there. I know my barn, it's like I said, out there where my barn was, they'd left the door open in the milk that night, and there's a fork of the tree went in the barn door, you know, and around the side of the barn. And it was up in my barn probably 2 bales of hay high, you know. And that was like this time. Whenever I went out there, it was about that deep again, you know. And that was pretty, running down through here pretty good to cross over there. But I never thought about my barn ago, and it was plumb full of hay from the ground up, you know. The sheds was full, and stalls was full, and it was full upstairs. But I had my rake, mowing machine, hay tedder in one side downstairs. I had double doors, you know, where you could drive through the shed. And it was up against the door, buck on the doors, when I went around there, you know. I asked my wife, I said, if she had drove the cows out and met her over there, and she said she had, and said the water was running across the culvert out there then, you know, and she had to wade and had trouble getting the cows out. But I'd been out then, it was 6 or 8 feet deeper, and it was trying to push the doors in on the shed. But I had them locked at the top and at the bottom, and it was a buck on them. And I thought, if I could just get over there and open them doors, you know, the water would flow through it. Maybe it'd save the doors. I didn't think about getting that deep, you know. And then it went on about an hour later, and then my brother, Raymond, he was right over there, hung up in it. And there wasn't no way to get to him. We called right straight across to here. He'd come down in this low place right over there trying to come out, you know. He's right straight across the road there.
Right inside of the house here.
Yeah, right straight across. See over there where that pole broke down?
Mm-hmm.
Right there was lodged. His truck lodged right against that. Now when he first come down there, he come down right over there and it washed it down over there. And then it turned it around. Now as long as they'd got out of the truck and they was in the back. And the water held them in. Because the truck was headed down this way, you know, down the river. The water was coming in behind, so they kept climbing. So that fence down through there, there's woven wire fence all the way down along there. It held them there, you know. It dammed up against the fence and it protected them. I had gate posts driving over there 4 feet deep in the ground, you know, and that woven wire, and it just kept in the darts and stuff and made a dam, you know. And they were just sitting on the other side of it until after it tore the fence down, right? And when the fence broke, it went over there, and then the truck turned around, and then it went backwards. It kept taking them backwards, lodged against the tree down there. They were still in the back of the truck, but this way up here in the water, you know. And then the way my one brother said that it seemed like a log or something come down, and then it shot that water up over them. That was the last time we saw them, you know. But the water hit the windshield and something, and it just went clear over the top of them. And that was about the last time that anyone ever saw. That was probably around 12 o'clock, wasn't it?
No, not that late.
11:30?
Probably.
So it was from where you were. We're standing out of the river, was 50 yards.
Yeah, but the water, see, the water was right up there. They had trucks parked over there, and then the fire department come in toward the end. They saw them wash out. I didn't, but they had lights over there, you know, and so they could see them, but they was clear up here in the meadow, you know. But I could hear him. I could sit right here and hear him holler till around 11:30. And then I'd come in the house, and they were still out there watching. Now you could hear them holler, but you couldn't holler over there to them because they was in, like where they sat there, see, they was between two main currents. They was in the middle, right? The main current went down that way, and then the main current went down this way. And that left them in the eddiest water there was from here over yonder. See, they was in the high part and in the middle of the stream. And it was making so much noise for them. Now you from here, you could hear them. I could hear them from right here.
Who was with him?
His wife, him and his wife, Moon. I know, like my other brother come in here and told me they was to go try, and I knowed it wasn't no use for them to try, you know, because I knowed they couldn't get over there, and that's about the time, you know, it turned the truck around. That was the last I saw them. Because there wasn't no way of getting over there. I'd say after 6 o'clock, it would have been an impossible task, you know. That was our, well, some of them come in here and said we better call for somebody. Well, our phone had done went out, you know. And we told, they said the phone over at Norman's still on. But anyway, my son that lives up here, he had a radio and we had this one. And I heard him on there, you know. And I didn't want him, you know, to come down across that bridge up there, because whenever I'd crossed it, it was up to it, you know. And this was an hour later, see, now I'm talking about an hour later. So I knowed that he couldn't cross that bridge, but I knowed he might try, you know. So I picked him up there in Canane, and I told him stay away, not to come, you know. But then I told him about my brother over here, and I said, you get back up and call for help. And he said he would, you know. He said not to worry, that he would go and they'd get some help. But, you know, I didn't think it would do any good unless it get a helicopter, and they'd call for a helicopter, and they wouldn't let any helicopters out. And fire department come probably an hour or so later, didn't they? But it was, you know, they just got here in time to see him wash off. And they couldn't have made it anyway. There was no way. I've seen that tried. You couldn't do it. Too much stuff coming, eh? No way to anchor. And if you could have anchored over there, you couldn't have got over there. It'd kill you before you got over there. Because it wasn't no way. Now, I saw that tried in Italy one time, and it worked, but there was no debris, you know. But this was full. You know what this was like. It started picking up debris around. Well, at the time they come down there, it was a picking it up, you know what I mean. Just like Raymond up there where he lived, everything he had was coming down through there. Now, he had probably 35, 40 cord of wood. It was coming down through there, you know, sticks of wood. Can you imagine crossing that much water with wood, baled hay, built pieces of buildings that come? Even if you'd had a rope tied over there, you couldn't have got through because it killed you. It broke the rope, you know. There was no way. But I always thought if he would have went back when the time before, if he had hit her back up the road, you know, on up the road, maybe there 300 or 400 yards. They could have survived it. But see, they come down here and got in right where it was going back to the river, and that's what got them. If they'd have been up.
Were they trying to get here to your house?
Well, they couldn't get in here. He was just trying to get away from the water, I reckon. But see, he was coming into more water. He was leaving on, what he was really doing, he was leaving the eddiest part of the water where he was waterbound in. If he had stayed even at his own house, he'd have been in less water. But he come down here to where it come in above his house, and then right over here it started going back. Yeah, and it swung back. And he was right where it was swinging back into the main river. And over there where his truck said, it turned it around, took it off the road, took it over at the edge of the riverbank, and the truck caught right close, maybe 10 feet in the edge of the riverbank, caught on a tree. But there was nothing there, and after being in the water there probably 4 hours, why, you know, they was in such a shape, you know, they couldn't hold on to nothing if it got a hold of it, like a tree or something. But we could still see him flash his flashlight up a tree there, but the tree was there. It was just a straight tree. There wasn't no way to, you know, to climb it. There wasn't no limbs on it. But we'd seen the house come down and everything, you know. That bale of hay, it's 1,400 bale of hay just from my barn coming down. It's 3 acres of silage from right above that come down, you know.
So you had to sit here and watch him out in that truck, and you knew.
We all stayed here and watched what time we could stand to watch. We was out and in, you know, but we couldn't do nothing. My brothers was here, and one brother, and his wife and his boys, we was all here.
And our daughter-in-law and five grandchildren.
Yeah, they was all here. Everybody was here, but we couldn't do nothing. Of course, Norman, our other brother, and his son-in-law and his daughter was over there, but this was nothing nobody could do. If we'd had something like Dewey Wilfong had down there in Parsons, well, we could have got in, you know, and then Big Endless. At first, you could have got in, you know, but just for an ordinary tractor or ordinary truck, you know, 2-ton truck, wouldn't face it. But the truck was already wet, you know, that big truck was already wet, you know, from trying to pull house trailers, and it was all messed up, and it wouldn't. But if he'd have got up in there, it couldn't have backed out because it was in the dark, and you'd probably missed the road to come out backwards because you couldn't, you know, get turned around. Yeah, that was a mess. It wasn't just nobody could do. Just really hard to take. You had to just keep going, do the best you could. That was all.
Oh, man, I can't imagine.
Yeah. I said it was really worse than war, you know what I mean? Like in war, most of the time you're separated unless you have some real close buddies that gets hit or hurt. Like, you shake it off, but, you know, to watch something like this, it's, you know, it's hard.
And to have it go on and on way into the night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was going on. Well, it started around 5:30, I'd say. First, between 5:30 and 6 o'clock, like time, it's hard to get that time in there because the time, you just couldn't keep no track of time. About the last track of time I'd really had till the next morning was whenever I got to Jennickston. And that was about 4:30. And from then on, time didn't mean much. I know whenever I got up there and I crossed that bridge, but whenever I left grade school, Thomas, the secretary come out and give me a list of phone numbers. Now, I knowed it was bad even before that, because one bus driver come in. I'd stayed school all day, and the bus drained all day, and the bus driver come in and told me, he said that part of his route was done washed out. And he'd told me about a bridge at Lanesville being washed out. And so we left there, drove over to grade school. And while I was loading up, secretary come out and give me telephone numbers of people that was already didn't want their kids to come home because they had done left, you know, to give them phone numbers that the kids were supposed to call before the other bus, you know, had a feeder bus, before he brought them. So he'd know where to take them, you know, instead of taking them home, he took them somewhere else. And I kept going pretty good. And of course, your runs, like Blackwater was on the road, and you kept doing all you could because, you know, time was all you had, you know, and all the runs was across the road, and I about had the best of my bus the way it was, you know, for running. And I know the last water I come through up Red Creek, why my heaters and lights started going off. The breakers was, it was waterlogged till it was a kick in my main breaker, you know what I mean, out front, the one that controlled the system. So I cut everything off on it, you know, all but just the motor. That's all I had left. And it wasn't getting too much, you know, because it was so wet. And whenever I come to Jennickston, I come around that bottom there, well, I thought maybe we was, you know, completely cut off from home. I knew if I could make the bridge, why, well, I could get home, you know. And I had 7 kids yet to get home. And I was kind of shocked when I come in and seen the Johnson Bottom cover. That's when you come down Big Run there and look across the dry fork and go up around. And I got to the bridge, it was right up close to the bottom of the bridge, you know. So I dropped it back in low gear because it didn't have much power and I didn't want it to die on the bridge. So I dropped back in low gear and give it what it had, you know. And I made it across there, and my daughter-in-law was waiting on the other side up against the hill there. And I had two kids for up in the middle of Jennickston, the Rouge girl. And so I told her to follow me. Because I didn't know whether that thing was a go run or what, you know. And I made it up to where I'd parked back some years ago. And Rose Girl's daddy was there waiting, it just pouring rain down. And I pulled it off in that parking lot, and I said, I'm going to leave it here. He said, it might not be here when you come back. And I looked at him and laughed. I said, I've weighed in, got them before here, you know. And well, he said, look up there. And we looked up the bottom, through the bottom there, and the foam was coming down there, the white foam was coming down through that bottom, I'd say 3 or 4 feet deep in. That was clearing above his house, you know. And he hollered at the girls to get to the house and get what clothes they wanted, you know, and let's get out of here. And so we jumped in the car. My daughter-in-law, she had the car turned around, and me and the five kids jumped in that car, and we took down through the bottom. And I think before Charlie come out, them girls' daddy, while they was wading the water was pushing them out. And we hit the mountain. Then her brother come in, he lives on above there, my wife's brother, and he come in right behind me, and he tried to go up, and it was giving him trouble, and he made it just above that house. He thought he could make it to his house. He lived on up about a half a mile, and it got to crowding him too much. He turned around, you know, and the water pushed him back out, and he come down, and he went to the top of the mountain. You can see the house up there. As you go down the mountain before you come to this big curve and come down in Jennickston, right? That's where her brother lives. You've probably been there, maybe, up Laurel. And that's how he got home that night, you know. But we come around this mountain until we got down here. That water was already all over here. We had to wade in from over there. And we parked the car over there. And I told my daughter-in-law to leave the keys in it because my brother had had to move. And he got all, tore up. He was tore up trying to move stuff around. And it got up in that car before they got moved out of the way, sitting over in the driveway. But it was running across this here 2 or 3 feet deep. That's how quick it got down here till we just went up around there and come down, probably. I'd say we come around maybe in 7 or 8 minutes that night. Wasn't long. Then from then on, then about an hour after that, then Raymond come down over there. And it was dark, you know, raining, foggy and dark. And I knowed an hour before that you couldn't get to him, but, 'cause I'd been out there, you know. And I'd went around the hill and looked at my barn. I was telling you about the barn, running through the barn. And I'd looked up to his house. And his truck, you know, he used his truck all the time. He never had his car out. He had a new car. His truck was sitting right by his patio door. And I never seen nothing of him, no lights or nothing. So I figured he was over at my brother's, right over in the bank at the trailer. And I come back to the house. And we'd eat a bite of supper. And I was sitting there, and my other brother come in and said, Raymond was over there. And I said, well, if he's over there, he'll have to sweat it out. And, you know, we still didn't think about getting that deep, you know, but there was no way to get over there. And he had already tried the truck, and he couldn't get up in. But he was wanting to ride inner tubes over, but I don't think he'd ever got back if he'd went over, because there's too much stuff coming. And in the dark, yet it was raining. In daytime, you might have had little chance, you know. But there was, you had two wire fences to face, barbed wire fences, and plus the stuff that was afloat. And it was just one of them things. The only thing I couldn't figure out why I stayed that long, but see, around his house, from the last report I heard, from what they claimed, it was coming in at his upper patio doors, and his upper patio doors was at least 2.5 feet off the ground level, you know what I mean? Now, that's how deep it was when he left the house. And that up there is the highest part, so he come down here, you know, and he buried, drowned it out. But they said he'd got out and cut his fan belt, but I don't know whether he did or not. But I think really what he was waiting on, he thought that Norman could get up in, you know, which he failed on that. But if they'd went back up the road, held onto that fence, they might have saved themselves. But you couldn't get over there to them, and you couldn't tell them what to do. Like Jack up there, my other brother, he tried to holler over and tell them not to get down here. But see, he couldn't hear him. You could hear them, but you couldn't talk to them, you know. You got too much noise between us. The river was roaring too much.
Do you think you'd been away from home too long and forgot about the river and what it could do?
No. I think he just, like everybody else, he just underestimated. I think we all did. I mean, I don't think anybody ever dreamed of it being that high, and so it just kept a pouring in. And he just put off too late, that's all. But I still think he could have got out maybe himself at first, but, you know, she wasn't used to water and was afraid of water, and he couldn't, wasn't much he could do, so he just stayed with her probably. He just stayed too long. That was, now, he knowed. See, he'd been here all day, and the rest of us hadn't. And he'd been up and down the road, hadn't he? And he was the devil on some of them other boys about getting out. Now, whenever they moved them trailers up through there, them boys come out to my barn, two of them. One was my nephew.